This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Bea Covington, Executive Director, and Deirdre Grace, Community Engagement Manager of King Conservation District. Bea and Deirdre are here to tell us about the work of the King Conservation District to promote the sustainable use of natural resources through responsible stewardship. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you having us.
What is a conservation district?
Well, that's a great question. Conservation districts were formed in 1938 on the back end of the Dust Bowl, and there was a realization nationally that farmers and people who were engaged in farm activity needed assistance and they needed support so that they could implement more sustainable practices on their farms. Today, there are some 3,000-plus conservation districts across the country. There are conservation districts across the state of Washington, and we are loosely aligned by county boundaries. The important thing to remember about conservation districts is that we are not regulatory agencies in any way, shape, or form. We work on an entirely voluntary basis with willing landowners who are interested in improving conservation practices on their private property. And so for us in the King Conservation District, our mission has morphed, if you will, over the years, because in King County, we have such a large urban population. And so we have shifted from doing classic farm assistance work, which we actually do in the eastern part of the county. But in the western part of the county, we are very much more focused on urban agriculture and urban activities, and those activities around healthy regional food systems, equity and social justice, and food access.
Would you explain your relation to the state government?
Deirdre, you want to take that one?
Sure. Conservation districts are special purpose districts. So we are an independent agency. We're not part of the state per se, but we do have a Washington State Conservation Commission that provides some of our funding and also helps sort of unify what conservation districts are working on across the state.
And where does the remainder of your funding come from?
The bulk of our funding comes from a per tax parcel fee. And the way that that works is that every parcel in the county, every parcel owner, whether your parcel is large or small, whether your parcel is expensive or not, pays a set annual fee. And it ranges from a low of $7.70 for vacant land up to almost $10 for agricultural land. And so your average Seattle property owner perhaps would pay around $9.50.
And people see that on their property tax bill if they're property owners.
That's correct. Yeah.
That's right. And that's per year, per parcel.
Would you say more about the geographical areas that you cover within the King District?
Yes, we work across the county. We work with 35 jurisdictions, so that's 34 cities and unincorporated King County.
Before we focus on specifics, would you give a brief overview of your programs?
I mentioned earlier that historically conservation districts have really focused on traditional rural agricultural activity, and we certainly do a lot of work in that arena. But for us, the scope of work is much larger. And there are a number, obviously everyone I think is familiar with the farms that are in the Snoqualmie Valley and in that area. And so we do a lot of work with farmers on farm, doing some of the traditional agricultural practice work. We work on habitat restoration on farms. We also work to help farmers improve water quality. We have an ag drainage program where we're working to actually recover agricultural drainage ditches on private properties so that more farmland can be brought back into production or put into production.
Right. I would just add that we've lost a lot of farmland over the last couple of decades to flooding, and it's really impacting the amount of food that we're able to grow in places like the Snoqualmie Valley. But in a nutshell, I would say that our programs are summarized by sort of three main areas, which is we focus on local food, healthy forests, and clean water. And we help people attain those goals wherever they are, whether it be on the farm or in the city or in the suburbs.
Who in King County is eligible for help from the King Conservation District?
Pretty much anyone in the county. We meet people where they are. So we come on a sort of a first-come, first-served basis. People with a 4,000-square-foot backyard, they're eligible. One of our programs is free soil testing, for instance. So every parcel owner in our district has up to 5 free soil tests on their property. If they want to do a garden, they can come in, they can send in their soil. So we work with everyone.
And I think it's important to say that we work with individual property owners, but we also work with municipalities and with organizations. So we've partnered in a number of instances with community groups to work on urban gardens, whether they be rain gardens or vegetable gardens. So we do that kind of work. We also work directly with municipalities.
That's right. We have a member jurisdiction grant program. It's nearly $1.3 million that we give to cities to then work with nonprofit agencies to realize their sustainable and natural resource goals as well. So those are parks, rights of way, community gardens, really anything that helps improve the natural landscape.
And I think more than the natural landscape, through the City of Seattle's Community Partnership Grant Program, we have funded a wide variety of projects, and Deirdre and I were looking at some of them before we came in today, and they range from doing things like working with the ECOS group to do multicultural outreach around stormwater and stormwater runoff issues to supporting in partnership with the Tilth Alliance, the Good Food Bag Program. And then I think one of my favorites is EarthCore has been working on restoring pollinator habitat along the Burke-Gilman Trail. And so these are all activities that citizens have come forward or groups have come forward and they have asked to use some of this member jurisdiction money, which is essentially a portion of that parcel fee that we give back directly in proportion to the amount a particular municipality or city pays in.
How do you choose and prioritize projects?
We have a number of different mechanisms. As a general organizational structure, we have a board of supervisors and we also have an advisory committee. And the way that we approach our five-year planning process is to create a five-year plan in cooperation with our advisory committee. And that committee is made up of representatives from all the jurisdictions, from the city and from the county, and from interested partner and stakeholder groups. So we work collaboratively with them to put together a plan of work, and it's then approved by our board of supervisors, and then we, as a staff team, get busy implementing it.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Bea Covington, Executive Director, and Deirdre Grace, Community Engagement Manager of King Conservation District, a natural resources assistance agency whose mission is to promote the sustainable use of natural resources through responsible stewardship. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. Would you give a specific example or two in detail of a project in rural King County?
Deirdre, should we talk about the ag drainage work in the rural county?
Sure. So a lot of the work that we've been doing in the last few years has really been responsive to King County's local food initiative. So this was a really big roundtable effort that took close to a year, had a lot of stakeholders across the food system, from food banks to farmers to grocery stores, PCC, other grocery stores were involved to really look at how is our food system working and what's broken about it and what can we do to really improve it. So at King Conservation District, we're focusing on the production side of that equation out in the rural areas. We're focusing on the demand side of that equation, looking at how can we increase local demand for local products. And we're looking at access. How do we make sure that people of all income levels and socioeconomic place in our society, how can we make sure they have access to good, local, healthy food? So on the production side of that, one of the things that we've been doing is we've been partnering with the county to return acreage to production out in the Snoqualmie Valley primarily. It'll be expanding to other areas soon. And in the last couple of years, we've brought in 130 new acres back into production that has been unable to be farmed for the last couple of decades. And we've improved production on additional 480 acres of farmland. These are acres that were being farmed, but they couldn't be farmed for the whole season because it was too wet in the beginning and too wet in the end. So significant more acreage being farmed today than was just 3 years ago.
And what was the project that allowed this acreage to be put back into use?
Well, it sounds very pedestrian. There are drainage ditches out in farming country. And over time, they get clogged with canary reed grass, silt, et cetera, and they're no longer functioning. But it's very expensive for farmers to be able to get the kind of heavy equipment they need to get those ditches cleared and operable again. So we were able to partner with the county to bring in the heavy equipment and the engineering help and the staff technical assistance to get those drainage ditches operating again.
What are some specific examples of your projects in the cities of King County?
We have a number of exciting initiatives in King County and in the urban areas. And Deirdre talked about the idea of looking at both production and access. And the access piece, I think there's two sides to that coin. One side is availability of farmers markets and ability of people of all income levels to access what is available at farmers markets through the Fresh Bucks program or the EBT program. And so we have done several targeted engagements with farmers markets to help them develop the capability to accept the Fresh Bucks and the EBT cards so that we can increase the number of people who are able to purchase food in farmers markets. And then on the flip side of that, one of the things that we've noticed is that for many of our farmers in the rural areas, being able to provide a consistent quality supply to larger institutions, whether it's hospital cafeterias or school cafeterias or corporate cafeterias, there are barriers there. And so we have farmers in the rural communities who have produce that they want to sell. And we have people in urban areas who want to buy local healthy produce and provide it to their employees or to their students or whatever. But there's a gap in there. And so we have been working in partnership with a number of organizations in the region to start to figure out how do we close that gap? And is it helping with food safety education? Is it helping provide central processing and packaging resources? Is it simply just connecting distributors to those two endpoints so that the existing distributors in the area can facilitate movement from the suppliers to the demanders?
Would you now go into detail about your landowner incentive program?
The landowner incentive program is a significant part of the work that we do, and we have landowner incentive projects that range from working on pure agricultural practices, things like putting in flood pads or putting in manure bins, to habitat restoration and shoreline improvement. So the landowner incentive program runs the gamut of a number of different types of programs. The framework is similar across all of them. We engage with a willing landowner who has a project or an issue in mind. We do an assessment, and based on that assessment, we identify interventions that are appropriate to address whatever the problem area is. And then we enter into a cost share agreement with that landowner so that work can be done. And in some cases, we have internal contractors that we have pre-identified and that we can work with and we can deploy to actually do the work. In other cases, the landowner assumes the responsibility for identifying a contractor and bringing them in and doing the work, and then we reimburse them.
Something that I think few people really realize is that 50% of King County is held in private hands. So any kind of really significant progress that we're going to make in our natural resource conservation has to include private landowners. We can't just focus on our public lands. And in a way, in this country and in this state and in this county, we have essentially a distributed land management system, right? We don't have a centralized body that takes care of all of our natural resources. We ask every single landowner to do that on their own. And so our landowner incentive program, along with a lot of our other programs, really exist to give those people the hand that they need, the support that they need, to be able to take care of the lands. It's their lands, but the natural resources flow across all those lands, right? So, you know, if you've got a stream going through your property and then it goes to your neighbor's property and then their neighbor's property, et cetera, et cetera, we want all those people taking care of that stream. And so we give them the support that we can through our landowner incentive program to help them do that.
Would you give a specific example or two of a landowner who has taken advantage of your program?
Oh, gosh, which one to pick?
We have some real heroes. We actually lost a real stellar landowner recently who passed away. His name was George Irwin, and he had property out in the Plateau area and has been working with the district almost since the district started. I mean, he has 40 years of doing natural resource conservation practices on his rural acreage. And he was a real model and mentor for a lot of people coming behind him.
And I think another example in the Lake Forest Park area, to kind of think of them sort of a more local, We worked with a private landowner in the last year, and they have improved over 32,000 square feet of riparian habitat along Lion Creek. And this is a creek that obviously is home to Chinook, Coho, Sockeye, and Steelhead. And so, you know, their work to remove barriers and to plant native species that will result in better water temperature and a number of different improvements that will have direct benefits for fish, I think that's a really exciting example.
A lot of what our work on the ground ends up doing, honestly, is removing invasive plants along a lot of these waterways and in a lot of the forests in our county and replacing them with native plants. And, you know, that's sort of the challenge of living in the Northwest, right? Mm-hmm. The good news is everything grows here, and the bad news is
everything grows here.
And so we really do have significant challenges with invasive species like blackberry and ivy, and they really do choke out our native plants in our forested and shoreline habitats. So a lot of our work with private landowners as well as with cities is going into these difficult areas, ravines, for instance, and, you know, literally rappelling down the side of ravines and pulling out that ivy, pulling out that Himalayan blackberry, and getting those good native plants back in there that support wildlife.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Bea Covington, Executive Director, and Deirdre Grace, Community Engagement Manager of King Conservation District, a natural resources assistance agency whose mission is to promote the sustainable use of natural resources through responsible stewardship. What fraction of your work is in rural areas compared to the urban areas?
It's changing so much, so fast. Boy, I'd be real hesitant to take a guess, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's about 50-50 at this point, because we get the majority of our financial support in urban boundaries. And so we have a responsibility to make sure that we help urban residents in implementing natural resource conservation. Even though traditionally we have worked primarily in the rural area, I would say that that's probably no longer the majority of our work.
I would agree with that. I was looking this morning before we came in at our overall budget, and if you look at the percentages that are devoted to urban versus rural, I think it's probably closer to a 60-40 split, with the 60 trending towards urban. And a lot of that has to do with the regional food system work that we're doing. And that program takes about 17% of our budget, and the bulk of that, about 82% of that, is dedicated to a regional food system grant program. Every year we award approximately $900,000 in competitive grants for people and projects who are working on regional food system issues. And that grant cycle actually has just opened up again for 2017. And if you go and look on our website, there is information about a series of workshops that are going to be held to introduce people to the grants program and also to provide assistance, because one of our key concerns is that all communities and constituencies have the ability to successfully compete for those monies. And so we're putting in place some mentorship opportunities so that organizations who have not historically perhaps had success with pursuing grant funding can get some mentoring in putting together those proposals and submitting for that work. So that's a big portion of our work that has an urban component to it. And then within the shorelines and the riparian habitat work, that also has an urban component to it. And then we have an urban forestry focus as well, where we target primarily urban landowners who have acreage that is near to public lands. And so our goal there is to try to get the urban landowner to understand the relationship between their particular small parcel of land and the larger tree canopy and the larger ecosystem where they exist.
Well, you've said a bit about this already, but how do you go about engaging the community in your programs?
Well, we have a lot of different programs, and each program is run a little bit differently. So there's not just one way that we engage community. You know, we engage with individuals. We engage with community organizations. We partner with them to get improvements on the ground. We engage with cities themselves to then, you know, go out and select their community groups that they want to work with. So we really are operating on a lot of different levels, and we really try to be as accessible to as many people as we can to see those kind of improvements on the ground.
What do you consider the key accomplishments of King Conservation District?
I came on as the executive director back in October, so I am learning a lot about the Conservation District and its work over the years. And coming in to the organization, one of the things that was attractive to me, and I would say this is a success, is how well the organization has navigated the, and I don't want to say transition, because we have not forgotten and we have not ceased our work with agricultural producers, but the transition into understanding that we as the King Conservation District live in a highly urbanized environment. And that is going to require, has required, a broadening of our focus and the broadening of the lenses that we use to understand problems that we face. And I think that in concert with our sister conservation districts in Pearson, Snohomish counties, and in the Puget Sound region in general, the district has been incredibly nimble in coming to that realization and in restructuring and retargeting itself. And I think that sets us up very nicely going into the future to really be a voice for agriculture space and what that means both in urban environments and in rural environments. I was at a conference just the other day and we were talking about open space and greenways and parks and trails. And all of that is critical, and it's critical to the human psyche. It's critical to emotional and physical well-being. It's critical to environmental sustainability. But agriculture space is part of that as well. And I think the Conservation District has a real role to play into the future and in the present of holding the banner for agricultural space. And you know, Deirdre and I were talking about it. You know, agriculture really is sort of the triple bottom line in terms of what you get for your return on your investment. Not only do you get economic returns in terms of food production and jobs and food security, there's emotional and environmental benefits as well as social benefits. I think everybody who's been on a farm or spent time in a farm environment has come away from that experience better bonded with the people. Nothing bonds you faster than pulling weeds in a potato patch.
Well said. And I would just say that sort of culturally, I think one of our biggest accomplishments in the last few years has been incorporating this advisory committee structure that Bea referenced a little earlier. You know, we have representatives around that table that are elected officials from across the region, that are rural landowners, that are urban landowners, folks that represent equity and social justice issues. And what they do more than anything is really help guide us and keep us really relevant and in the middle of what is needed in our region for natural resource conservation. They really help ground truth our programs and make sure that what we're doing is responsive to the changing needs of the region. And we really appreciate their contribution. And I just don't think that we would be as nimble and as successful as we've been without them.
What do conservation districts in other parts of the country do? To what extent are they similar to or different from the King Conservation District?
Well, it's interesting. I had the pleasure back in November of going to the annual conference of the National Association of Conservation Districts. And I was able to meet people from all over the country and from parts of Washington that I hadn't met before. And I would say that conservation districts in the state of Washington and King Conservation District, we're very similar to our sister conservation districts, but I also think we are very much a thought leader in terms of understanding things like the impact of climate change on agricultural productivity and the implications that that will have for larger societal agricultural sustainability. I think along with the conservation districts in the Northeast in particular, where you have that heavy sort of intersection between high density urban areas and lower density rural areas that have been more traditionally agriculturally focused, I think we're right there in the middle with our sister conservation districts in understanding the notion of food systems and systems concepts in general and how conservation districts have a really pivotal role to play.
What volunteer opportunities are available with King Conservation District?
We have a number of different kinds of volunteer opportunities, depending on whether you want to get your hands dirty or not, let's say. So we have a native plant nursery where we propagate native plants for our projects, and folks can volunteer at the nursery, and they earn sort of plant credits, if you will. So for every so many hours that you donate your time, you get a credit towards the plants that are grown there. We also do a lot of engagement and outreach with community organizations and at fairs and events. And we'd love to have volunteers help us with that and help tell the King Conservation District story and help us just engage with as many people as possible.
And we also have, from time to time, work days. Deirdre mentioned earlier that there are lots of invasive species that are clogging up waterways and banks and things like that. And we very frequently deploy work parties to pull out blackberries and to go in behind and plant native species. And so quite often, if you check our website, there will be announcements for different opportunities like that to come spend a Saturday morning. And typically, we provide all of the shovels and everything. You just need to bring a warm coat, dry shoes, and a strong back.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
We touched on it a little bit earlier, but I think the real message is for everyone to realize that, you know, conservation is not something that other people do. Every single person has an opportunity to engage daily in making choices that have a positive impact on conserving our environment, conserving our agricultural systems, and conserving our ecosystems. And I think in line with that, what I had said earlier, this idea that when we think about open space, we need to think about ag space as part of open space and working ag space, and not just rural working ag space. I think the pea patch garden or the lettuce that you have in your hanging basket on your back porch, all of that is agriculture. And so every one of us, I think, in some way, shape, or form, we either are a farmer or we know a farmer or we touch a farmer. And I think that we just need to be aware of that.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having us.
You are just listening to Bea Covington, Executive Director, and Deirdre Grace, Community Engagement Manager of King Conservation District. For more information, check on the web at kingcd.org. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on kexp.org.